coming up this week on the Course of Life podcast in Naples, Florida at the QBE shootout. A new team got the W. Plus, we recap the star-studded match under the lights, some wildlife and golf, and a whole lot more. We're tuned into holiday lights and some hockey in the South. And this week's guests, we have a man named Ben Chase, who is on the most epic college football road trip ever this season. And he breaks it all down for us. A really cool conversation. And it's holiday drinks and burger orders when we always end with food. All of it brought to you by our friends at Desert Fox Golf. Mike, so much to say about Desert Fox Golf. I want to get it out real quick for the shoppers out there who still are looking for something for the golfer in their life. You can go to desertfoxproducts.com. They are running a sale on their tumblers. I love the Swing 8 tumbler because it keeps your drink nice and cool throughout the round. They're a gift for a golfer or anyone in your life that just needs a drink holder. $20. Promo code HOLIDAY25 is the discount code that they're offering. Buy one, get one. Really great deals there on the tumblers, the phone caddies, and everything else that they have to offer at desertfoxgolf.com and desertfoxproducts.com. Also, their cigar holders back in stock for the smoker and the smoking aficionado in your life that likes to have a cigar on the course. So check out those websites for everything great that Desert Fox Golf does for the golfer in your life. And happy holidays from Desert Fox Golf.
Hello, interwebs, and welcome to Course of Life. We are proud to be presented by our friends at Desert Fox Golf and Voris Golf. I'm Michael, he's Alex. And Alex, it was a lot of fun this weekend in the golf world. A lot was happening thanks to Team Golf as well as the match. We'll get to the Saturday evening golf under the lights in a moment. But first, let's talk about the QBE shootout down at Tiburon in Naples, Florida. That sounds familiar because, of course, the ladies were just there a few weeks ago for the CME Championship and ended their season there. And lo and behold, the rookies took the win at the QBE. Tom Hoagie and Sahith Theegala, winners by two. Clutch putt by Theegala on the last. I mean, we kind of, this was Theegala's breakout year. This is a great way to end it for him.
It is, you know, it's kind of fitting. He hasn't quite gotten over the hump and really lifted that super official trophy on the tour like we'd like him to. But overall, it's been a fantastic rookie campaign for him. He'd been bubbling under kind of on the Monday qualifier, Korn Ferry mini tour circuit for a year or two, and he's really broken through in 2022. We joked about it before he hopped on, but he could be on that Team USA international team conversation in President's Cups and Ryder Cups in the future year. And him and Tom Hoagie, a guy who's already won on tour, cementing it with some really impressive play this weekend. So yeah, a nice little jumpstart. Again, this isn't the most official win in the world of golf, but always fun to be lifting a trophy in December and get some extra money for the holiday. So shout out to that team for getting it done.
We have seen guys, though, play in these team events, most notably the Zurich Classic, and then have hot rest of the seasons. So my real question now is, do we think we're going to have Tom Hoagie and Sahith Theegala together at next year's Zurich Classic in New Orleans?
Oh, I like that. A little preview for the team competition in the spring. That's a good thought, actually. Didn't think about that. I think that is that's a thought to watch out for the next few weeks. Definitely could. Mm-hmm. I mean, why would you not just roll with that? Especially if you're a guy that's not super established. So my only thought is, unless Tom Hoagie can convince his Dallas friend Jordan Spieth to play in the Zurich, I don't really think he's got a partner. I don't think Theegala is either. So I think you just officially locked that match in for next spring.
Yeah. Pretty much. So let's talk about your top pick in the QBE shootout. That was Harris English and Matt Kuchar. They were able to finish in solo third at 32 under par.
Team boring because they're just a couple of wet blankets. Let's just be honest. There's not really a lot of personality from either one of those guys. One other team we will shout out is, I know you were interested in the LPGA players in action on the teams, and Nelly Korda. Lexi Thompson played fine in her own light. Nelly Korda absolutely lit it up and had a bunch of highlight shots with Denny McCarthy this week.
I mean, she was putting it on the flag stick almost every hole. It was kind of incredible what she was able to do. Unfortunately, they still put up a 67 in the second round, which is why they weren't able to do better than a T5.
But yeah, 34 under par to win this tournament, by the way. Yeah, you got to go very low.
You'd expect nothing less from Nelly Korda after having a great weekend at the CME just a couple weeks before at the same course. So. Yeah. So that was the QBE shootout. PGA Tour is kind of, there's quiet. Something else coming up. It's not really an official event, though. I mean, it is, and it isn't all at the same time. We'll talk about the PNC Championship coming up. But for now, let's talk about the match under the lights, mic'd up, no caddies, which at least one of them almost left their towel behind.
What, these guys ever played golf before? Jeez.
Right, yeah, I mean, it's, come on, man. But you had it, and it happened, and Tiger Woods was there. He was hitting snap hooks and not having shot tracer follow the ball. But at the end of the day, Jordan Spieth, Justin Thomas, 3-2, win over Tiger and Rory. I don't know if it was the shorts that they were wearing. I don't know if it was because they're just in the prime of their careers right now and Tiger can't walk like we talked about, or if it was just that they're trash-talking animals between the two of them, but they were able to take the W.
Yeah, in short, Rory and Tiger got worked in the match, basically. Yeah. That's the informal way to say that. They were fine and had a lot of pedestrian pars. That amazing shot you were referring to was about a 100-yard hook that Tiger played off the tee on the one club hole. I'll say that was one of the highlights. I enjoyed watching them all muffle around a golf hole, only having to play one club, Rory chipping with a 4-iron and just no one even hitting the green from about 60 or 70 yards with a mid iron. I did get some laughs out of that. So I appreciated the format switch ups throughout the match, the closest with the pin and whatnot. Overall, my thought was I was just watching Tiger, seeing how he swung the club. He said he couldn't walk much and he wasn't lying about that. He was very ginger on his feet. But the swings he made were very impressive. So if he figures out the walking thing in the next few months, so be it. He could play some golf in the near future.
Yep. What do you think was the best moment out of this whole match event under the lights? Was it JT and Jordan giving Rory a 10-foot putt and just telling him it was good? I mean,
pretty cocky moment there.
Yeah. Was it Tiger using the cart's reverse buzzer to distract Justin Thomas? I mean, what do we think was the moment here?
Yeah, those are the top nominees. The trash talking from Thomas and Spieth was definitely ahead of Rory's and Tiger's for sure. I appreciate the old school old man method with hitting the reverse button and leaving it on during JT swing by Tiger. That's such an old man move. I mean, tell me you're not turning 47. Well, tell me you're turning 47, Tiger. But fun antics for sure. My one other note and thought on the match overall is that I think it was really cool to see the golf under the lights, but the venue just didn't really quite hit the way I would have wanted to. It was just no offense to Pelican, it's a very nice looking course, but it's a flat Florida venue that didn't necessarily present as super grandiose in the night sky. You know, you remember the battle at Bighorn way back in the day when they used to throw the lights in like these desert mountainside courses. That really gave us a true vista and a spectacular vibe. I think maybe just a venue change might be needed for future matches that happen under the lights.
Yeah, I think if you're going to do an evening golf, you got to do it West Coast so that we can get maybe the more of that sunset going on as opposed
get that maybe, you know, if it's 12 holes, maybe you get 7 holes in the light and then hole 8 to 12, you just have the lights there. And then you play golf through the sunset and into the night, and then you have 4 or 5 holes under the lights. It could be a nice little mix if they switch that out west. I like that.
I mean, I would just like them to go out and do the match at Pebble. I mean, that would just be beautiful.
Want the lights out at Pebble for the finish there? Yeah. How about that?
I just want to see if Jordan can recreate that shot where he was at the edge of the cliff.
Oh, almost died. Yes, Jordan Spieth almost died. Remember that? We'll be sure to bring that up in the year-end recap for sure. Jordan Spieth almost died early this year in front of our eyes.
He didn't, and instead he was able to beat Tiger and Rory in the match. So there you go. All right, let's talk about the DP World Tour. They were down in South Africa, and there were hippos and elephants and all sorts of wildlife.
I just had to shout this out because I knew you'd appreciate this. Shout out to the DP World Tour and the broadcast team there for really bringing the true highlights of this December golf. Listen, I'm kind of half paying attention, you know, at this point in the calendar golf-wise. So I need things a little outside the box to get the engine revved up when I'm watching golf. And the DP World Tour certainly delivered. Outside Leopard Creek in this course they're playing at, Mike, in South Africa, is just a wildlife preservation. So they're just doing like 60, 90-second long narratives as we're watching hippos just like bathe themselves and elephants just like spray everywhere and just have a field day. Here's your fun fact, Mike. Hippos, how many degrees do you think they can open up their mouth in terms of an angle? How many degrees do you think they can open their mouth?
A hippo, they can get pretty big. I'm going to go with like 135 degrees.
Yeah, 150 degrees. Okay, those hippos can open up their mouth. So you don't, needless to say, you don't want to get caught in between their teeth,
no.
I'd say.
No, not at all.
Yeah. Fun wildlife on the DP World Tour, regardless.
Yeah. Let's talk about LIV Golf, because I always talk about LIV Golf. I have something else actually to add to our LIV Golf conversation. Let's first
it's a fun note that you're going to appreciate. So again, yeah. I'm watching rather meaningless, not completely meaningless to the guys over there, but just rather pedestrian European Asian Tour events. And it's funny, you know, for all the debate regarding the schedule flexibility that these LIV players have been talking about end over end and month over month, there were some LIV Tour players out grinding at these random events in December right now, Mike, that it would make you laugh, that Charles Schwartzel and Louis Oosthuizen teeing it up in December in South Africa. Lee Westwood and other European LIV players playing on the Asian Tour in the Indonesian Masters. My Graham McDowell's teeing it up in Indonesia in December. I just think it's it got a chuckle out of me with all the debate about schedule flexibility in 2022 to see them still finding these random venues to grind out OWGR points, which have become all the rage. So I thought you'd appreciate that little tidbit.
It's just dumb. It's just so dumb. There was, I don't know if you saw this, I think it was yesterday, an article came out from the New York Times in which the Times had acquired some documents from LIV Golf that showed the like original proposition, the Saudi wealth fund about.
Interesting.
Kind of like the assumptions that were made about the success rate that LIV Golf was going to have. And these assumptions included signing the 15 top players in the world.
All of them.
Getting major endorsement deals, getting TV contracts, and getting the PGA Tour to like work with them. And all, you know, it was like these really far-fetched out there assumptions of things that would happen.
They've got about one or 1.5 out of 4 of those you said on the list.
Not even, really. It's just like, so yes, LIV Golf is there so that the Saudi government can sport wash themselves and make them look good. But I wonder how long they'll go with this if they don't see success.
And we talk about how, yes, the endless money, they can go forever. They can, but I think there is a human side of this, in that they actually do want to see a formal return on their investment. We don't know what that looks like, but I do agree that we wonder how long that string gets played out.
It'll throw money at this all you want in order to try to make your country look good to attract business or tourists or whatever. But at what point do you just say, all right, that's enough, and fold on it?
The idiot statement is, Mike, it has to look good to look good. You know what I mean? You can't fake the tour looking good. You know what I mean? You can't. So we'll see what's to come in the months. We got a year-end recap in a couple weeks, by the way. So stay tuned for that and subscribe if you are not already. Well, we're definitely going to break down all our feelings, vibes, and thoughts throughout this crazy year in the game as well.
It's true. Let's look ahead to this weekend, because we get two straight weekends of Tiger Woods wearing Tiger red. In this case, we'll actually see him wear it on a Sunday instead of a Saturday. I mean, the PNC Championship, the parent child, correct, Tiger Woods, defending champs, the Dailies will be there. Justin Thomas will be back out there again.
With his dad.
What do we think? Is this Tiger and Charlie's year? Is this going to be it?
Yeah, I wrote the preview. Check out runyourpool.com. But the only spoil I'll give to that preview is I am officially leading with the pick that Tiger and Charlie Woods will win the PNC Championship this weekend. It's not a shot on my dear friend John Daly, who I met at Augusta this year, and his son JD Jr., who I think have all the game to do it again and defend. I just think that Tiger is in a good enough spot and playing with a cart and healthy and swinging well, plus Charlie is a year older, wiser, better, and smarter. I think that can get them over the hump this year and get them the W over the Dailies. In my mind, this is a 2, maybe 3 horse race, and I wrote that in the preview. You can check out all of that on runyourpool.com, but it's Woods, it's Team Daly, it's Team Thomas. Anyone else going to have a hard time contending.
All right, there you go. You heard it here first. We'll be back next week, and we'll see if Alex is crying or celebrating.
Yes, that's right.
Maybe one or the other. Let's go ahead and switch over to Tuned In, where we share what we're tuning into outside of the world of sports slash golf, because this kind of morphs every week sometimes, depending on how we feel. Because this week I was still tuned into sports, but it wasn't golf. I was at a Savannah Ghost Pirates hockey game.
This is a Tuned In for sure. I'll let you have this one in the world of sports, because you hitting up a hockey game is awesome to see. It's been a while. Like, think about it. It has been... Oh, God.
Last
we're dating ourselves 14 years since you and I have been to a hockey game together?
Together, yes. But for me, the last hockey game I went to was the 2017 NCAA championship game in Tampa.
Yes, no comment.
I don't like to talk about that game because it was beyond depressing.
But hockey in Savannah, tell me what that was like. Is this, what minor league is this? Do we know it all?
So this is the inaugural season of the Savannah Ghost Pirates. Okay. This is they're an ECHL.
Yep, got it. Okay.
Team.
That's like the double A version of the NHL. Two steps below.
They're the minor league affiliate of the Las Vegas Knights.
Nice. Very
cool.
So,
I'm sorry, Savannah. This team sucks.
Okay.
First year of a new team. They don't have a lot of great players on that team. They're still building the roster. They've only been playing together, this one season. You don't have a lot of consistency going on. And they just look sloppy out there on the ice. They were playing the Atlanta Gladiators, who look much better than them.
How was the crowd there? What was that? What was the crowd vibe like there?
Crowd was good. It was a sold out crowd, though there were empty seats. So I think some season ticket holders weren't there. But for a Sunday afternoon, $20 tickets, I was like five or six rows up from the ice. I was in the corner, so it was kind of not a great angle, but it was fun to be at a hockey game again.
It is. It's good. Always good energy when you attend a hockey game live. Doesn't really matter how big or small the crowd is. There's always just a good little buzz.
Yeah, I wish hockey was more enjoyable on the TV, but it's not. It's horrible. Yeah, so just exactly.
Definitely attend live hockey if you haven't been listening out there.
Yeah. So if you're in Savannah, check out the Ghost Pirates. Hockey seasons run forever, so it's got always a game going on.
Good stuff. Yep, I was tuned into the holiday festivities, as always. We're days down to the holidays. Hanukkah, Christmas coming up, and it was the ATX Trail Lights, which is annually the most awesome display in Austin, Texas. It's at Zilker Park, which is also the home of the Austin City Limits Music Festival, which everyone knows out there. And every year, Christmas time, they deck the Trail of Lights out. I posted a really awesome reel, which you can see at COL Podcast or at Course of Life Alex. Be sure to check that out. But a good time as always. And for the first time in 3 years, Mike, you could walk it. It was a drive-through for the last 2 years for obvious reasons, but it was good to get the steps in and check out the Christmas lights.
Nice. We'll see how it compares. I'm thinking we're going to be going to the one here in Savannah this weekend. So we'll see.
Yeah, hey, dueling reels. Most views wins head-to-head.
There you go.
Let's do it.
We'll see how it goes. But for now, let's go ahead and get into this week's guest. I went to a sporting event this weekend. You go to your share of college football games out there in Texas. You've done some road tripping around the state of Texas as well to go to some different college football games. But really, you have nothing on who you talk to for this week's episode, Ben Chase, who's got the ultimate college football road trip going on.
This is absurd. I'll say the numbers now, just so you can quickly wrap your head around it. As we get into this conversation, he is shooting for upwards of 76 college football games this season. And there's an absurd stat he brings up about how many states he's looking to get to. Everything on this amazing road trip from Ben, a really cool guy who shares his experience around the college football globe, basically, this year. Fun conversation coming your way.
We'll get that with Ben in just a moment. But first, let's talk about Voris Golf. They've joined us as partners here on the podcast just a little while ago, and they're a great golf glove maker, really soft, comfortable glove. I wore it in my most recent round and had great control of the club with it. And it's got through-touch technology on these gloves, so you can keep it on your hand while you're using your smartphone. Means you don't need to take it off if you don't want to. If you just, that phone is in your Desert Fox phone caddy right there on your cart, and you just want to pull it out and use it because your right hand's steering the wheel, and you pull it, take it with your left hand, and you can go ahead and use that phone.
See what you did there.
With this love. I mean, it's the way to go. And there's still time.
Yep.
It's only 2 weeks.
There's time.
Almost 2 weeks till Christmas. There's still time to get yourself and your friends A Voris golf glove comes in white, comes in black. They got polos and hats as well on their website, vorisgolf.com. And as our present to you, 18% off anything on their website, COL18 is the promo code you need. 18% off anything at vorisgolf.com. That's VORAUSgolf.com, COL18 to save 18%.
Next up, by way of Arizona, Florida, and pretty much all over, we have a Florida man who's living out the dream of basically every sports fan. He's taken the road on a season-long college football road trip, and he's here to tell us all about it. It's Ben Chase joining the Course of Life. Ben, how are we doing, and where are you currently at today?
Yeah, thanks for having me on. I'm doing all right, a little tired, but that's a part of what road trip culture is. I'm in Valpo, Indiana right now at a Starbucks, so hopefully the background music isn't too loud, but I pulled over in here, and I'm on my way to the Northeast. I'm trying to also knock out all 48 states. Why not?
Oh, nice. Love it. Yeah, might as well kill two birds with one stone while you're hitting the road as hard as you are. And we're hearing this as bowl week approached. You would have just gotten to Army-Navy this past weekend. It's Ben G. Chase for everyone who wants to follow along. I see that you're a Florida Gators fan through and through. Tell me a little bit, just first and foremost, going to football games, like growing up as a kid, what was that like for you? And was it always trip-oriented, or was it local where you grew up?
Yeah, so that's a good question. I grew up in Orlando, Florida, born and raised watching Dante Culpepper at UCF, actually. And that's back when they were called Central Florida Golden Knights. And now they're obviously UCF Knights. So it's been a while. And I mean, those were just trips. My after school program, we got a bunch of free tickets because they used to play in the Citrus Bowl or the Camping World Stadium, whatever they call it now. So they couldn't give tickets away. I mean, every other game was, I think they were paid to lose every game when I was growing up, because that's how, you know, bad they were at the time. It's crazy the turnaround they've had. So it was just, you know, bus trips to the stadium and back. And then I didn't go to college until I was 21. I worked at Walt Disney World.
Okay, and very cool.
At one point, I wouldn't say a mental breakdown, but I was just not happy with my life. And my friend goes, if you're not happy, do something about it. And that day I applied for college in her apartment. And so I went to community college in Orlando at Valencia, and then I went straight to Florida and was indoctrinated into Gator Nation. And then when I was there, I would do road trips from Gainesville to, you know, Baton Rouge. And then in grad school, I did D.C. to Gainesville and then Orlando to College Station. So that's kind of when the road trip kind of bit me.
Very cool. Yeah. And Florida is a good flexible state where you can get to a lot of different schools. And I learned that growing up in the Northeast, there wasn't much college football, but moving to Texas, I can see a lot of different programs with just the drive of a car. So you took that to the extreme, and you are taking that to the extreme this year. Now, I'm curious. I see that there is some sort of record out there in terms of a record length or duration of a trip that you've spoken of. How did you first hear about that record, and what made you decide to potentially topple it?
Yeah, so, you know, I'm just like, I'm pretty competitive in a sick way. You know, in college, my friends called me the exception because I did everything the wrong way and it always worked out.
Nice.
And, you know, I left my last opportunity 2 weeks before the season. And actually, last summer, I was thinking about doing this, and I stumbled across these two brothers in 2016 that hit 57 games on the road. And, you know, all their articles said that they were achieving, you know, a Gopher for world record, and they applied for Guinness. And then, you know, a few weeks into the season, I found out that their attempt like got rejected because it didn't have quote unquote international appeal. So I was like, well, we'll see what happens. You know, if it becomes an official record, cool. If not, like, I'm going to go for it regardless. And then
interesting,
we'll know. You know, at this point, like, to me, it's not even about like the record. It's about, you know, the story and love of college football and how I believe in this thesis. This is the thesis from since day one that nothing brings a community together more than college sports, specifically college football. You know, I've been to 59 games and I've only paid for 11 tickets. And, you know, I've been to 59 games in 59 different stadiums, which are like cathedrals to these, you know, these fans, right? 59 different chapels. And
I've
experience the religions of, you know, these campuses and these communities. And that's what this is all about.
Very cool. Yeah, let's talk about that because I'm sure people are wondering, and they're skeptical as they're wondering too. They're wondering how this is getting done by you financially. And you just spoke to it right there. Talk a little bit about the community of college football and these towns and the fans and the people that are fans of the game and I guess fans of your trip and want to see this come to fruition that have made it easier on you.
Yeah, you know, from the beginning, like I said, you know, two or three weeks early in the beginning of the show, I jokingly reply sometimes to like vulgar tweets that this is a family show. So early in my quote unquote show, that is this trip, that is my life, I was vehemently against GoFundMe and I still am. Like, I've never started GoFundMe, even though I probably had 100 people say that. But you know, after like week two, I'm just like, everyone's like, what's your Venmo? What's whatever? Like, I'd love to support you. Like, I just like said, all right, well, yeah, I'm going to make it hard, but like, you have to ask me for that. Like, you know, and then people reach out to me and say, hey, like, I see, because each week I'll post my schedule of my upcoming games and people will be like, oh, like, I have an extra ticket for you or whatever. So, you know, 50, you know, and it's funny because like, a few of the games that I bought tickets for, I've had people say like, hey, I've got a ticket for you. And then like either we lose reception at the game or like they go in, they can't like find me or whatever. So yeah, I probably could be at like, you know, 8 or 9 games, but 11 out of 59 that, you know, I've went up to random tailgates and said, hey, do you have an extra? Or people just message me advance. You know, I never like ask the schools for anything, but some of the schools have reached out like once they see that I'm going and say, hey, you know, we'll get you like on the field or whatever. So it's been, you know, a super blessing. And I've had, you know, random people from the internet, like just Venmo me money. And it's kind of one of those things where, you know, tell people where to go and tell people where you're going and they'll help you get there. And like the story is that.
Very cool. Let's talk about how you're getting there as well, too. And I know there's a little bit of a storyline that's emerged this season regarding your van life and your vehicles. Fill everyone in on Betty and Barry White and what driving has been like this season for you.
Yeah. So Betty White is the OG. She's my 2017 Dodge Grand Caravan. And as you allude to, it's kind of been, you know, a theme of the season. You know, I've driven in her, I believe at this point, over 42,000 miles.
Wow.
And the running joke is Betty for Heisman because, you know, she's been to, I think, probably 51 or 52 of the games of the 59, you know, 42,000 miles, 8 oil changes, you know, tire, like a brand new transmission. And the brand new transmission happened because on the way from from Sarasota to Toledo, she died in just north of Atlanta. So that's where Barry White came in. And Barry White is just Nissan Versa.
Okay. Yeah.
And, I slept out of a Nissan Versa for a few nights. But luckily a few people, when they saw that, were like, no, we're getting you a hotel. So I think I've had 11 hotels on the trip and I haven't paid for any of those either. Like people either are like, hey, you can crash with me. Like I'm going to be at this game in this town, or hey, like, I have points I'll share with you. But every other night, I believe I'm probably at 70 or 75 nights in between Barry and Betty out of 100 and like one or two nights on the road.
How is that sleep for you? Honestly, have you gotten used to it over time, sleeping in the car?
Yeah, actually, honestly, like I prefer it to like some random person on the internet messaging me to like I could crash at their place. Like I actually, it's like the one thing that's constant in my life.
Yeah, interesting.
Traveling everywhere. And, you know, it's my home. Like I'm very protective. Like I purposely like don't post pictures of where I'm at or where I'm going to be until like after I've already left, you know, so like things like that. But, you know, in my van right now, last night it got to, 15 degrees when I woke up at least. And, you know, that's pretty cold. So I have 3 blankets and, you know, 3, like the back of Betty. So Betty's a Dodge Grand Caravan. So the back is all stow and go seating. So I folded all the seats into the back. So it's like really actually super comfortable. But Barry was not comfortable. between trying to sleep, like the first night I like slept kind of in the trunk and that was terrible. And then I just like curled up in the back seat for like the 2 or 3 other nights that, or however long I had Barry for. But no, I'm used to it now for sure.
Grinding it out, indeed. I love it. It's Ben G. Chase for everyone who wants to follow along on social and the journey of his season-long college football trip. Let's get into the journey. Week 0 started actually randomly enough in a stadium that I have been to in Las Cruces, New Mexico. How long ago does that feel to you, being what, tens of thousands of miles apart from where you are now?
No, it's absolutely wild, especially because that game was week 0, game 1, and it was they had a lightning delay in that game. And
yes, that's right.
State, if you haven't followed them like from like actual season wise, they're bowl eligible, which is crazy.
They found a way to get a sixth win. I saw that. Yeah,
I know. And like that game against Nevada week one, like they were winning, and then there was like a lightning strike, and it just sucked the whole like vibe out of the stadium. And they ended up losing basically like on 2.5 plays. So I'm really happy for, you know, it's funny that like people ask like, oh, you're driving those pistons, like you probably don't drink, whatever. Like I have 3 rules. One of them is if I get offered a drink, I have to take it. And that game one of this trip was the one that probably like I drank the most at, because this guy just kept offering me. He's like, this is the best Mexican tequila you'll ever have. And like just saying, so that was kind of wild, but I'm glad there's no games after that, because week zero, that was the only one around. Otherwise I would have probably missed the next day.
Hard to turn down, indeed. Let's continue with what might, maybe I want to ask a question in this form. I'm originally from Boston, Massachusetts area, and I saw you got to a Harvard game. Is that the oldest stadium that you've been to on the trip, or have you been to an older building?
Well, that's the oldest college football stadium in the country.
I thought so, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. So I've been to the oldest college football stadium in the country and the newest college football stadium in this country, which is San Diego State. Like, that's a beautiful arena. Harvard, and that game was wild. Harvard, I think, was a 28-point favorite. They were down 14 with 5 minutes left, tie the game, and win in overtime. They scored on the first play of overtime, but then had to play defense. But yeah, that was absolutely crazy.
Very cool. One thing I want to touch on is something that you've inspired me to already do next season, because I'm right here in Central Texas, and I've often wondered if I could get to 2 games in the same day, and you did that here. Yeah. You went to Austin for a Longhorns game, and you went right down I-35 to check out the Texas State Bobcats in San Marcos. Tell me about that experience and getting to multiple games in one day.
Yeah, and so I think that was the first time. I think, yeah, it was, because that was week
two. Was it?
That was week two. Yeah, yeah. So I've actually ended up doing that 6 times on this trip, and I'm going to do it once during bowl season, I think. So that was the Texas two-step, as I called it at the time. It was Alabama at Texas, and then up to San Marcos against, I think it was FIU. And that Alabama against Texas game was probably one of the top 3 hottest games I've been to. So when I left that stadium, I was so tired that I actually pulled into a Taco Bell on the way to the next game and just like sat there for 20 minutes because I was so tired.
Yes, I do remember the heat. I was out there for College Game Day, and then I quickly got inside to the bar to watch that game. So bless you for lasting a day out in the Texas heat that day in September.
and then I was actually pleasantly surprised. Like, San Marcos is beautiful. I didn't have any expectations, but then I get there. Oh, wow, this is incredible. And I would say that from like a pre-game standpoint, their students have like one of the coolest setups in the country. They have these crazy rage cages that basically every fraternity or student organization has their own cage. It's basically just like 9 or 12 clubs that you kind of go into anyway, but if you're a student, I would say it's one of the surprising really cool spots.
Very cool. The full list for anyone who wants to check out every single game you've been to is on your Instagram. You can check it out and see everywhere you've been. I want to confirm one, because I think this might have been one of my favorite games I viewed as a fan all season. Were you at the TCU Baylor game with the mad dash field goal at the end? Because I wanted to ask about what the scene was like in that crowd of fans who were maybe expecting a win and then had it sucked out of the building in a moment's time. Explain what that was like to be there.
They were expecting a field storm. I actually went down a level because I was in the student section at the top of the student section. If I don't know people, I just try to stay by the energy, whether it's the band or the student section. I was with, in the student section, and like, they're like, all right, we're headed. So I hopped down like a level, like physically hopped down and followed the students with about 1.5 minutes left and watched that last drive. And oh my gosh, that was, I mean, the energy that was sucked out of that stadium was, one for the books. I've been to a lot of games, and like that one was, I've stormed the field before at the Kansas game when they became bowl eligible and tore down the goalpost. But the exact opposite feeling of a walk off field goal with no time left, that was special.
Very cool moment in the season. One thing I want to get to is balancing also having a real life with this crazy trip this fall. I love that you make note of the weddings that you've also worked into your busy life schedule. Tell everyone how that works for you to balance real life and this trip and the support system of people that make it all happen for you as well.
You know, it's funny because like I said to someone that stayed, so I was with Boise State for the Mountain West Championship, and the next day we went out to these hot springs in Oregon, and I said, hey, can we stop and see this bridge on the way back? And we stopped, and we didn't get to the bridge, but we like walked and walked. Just like went up. I'm from Florida, so like it was covered in snow, so I was just like in awe.
Right.
And as we were leaving, we turn around and there's a bald eagle. And I was like, man, this is not real life. I'm just living in this like really crazy like thing. So when you say, you know, my real life stuff, like the wedding. So this fall, I've had three weddings all on Sundays. So that really worked out for me. And I'd plan games around those locations. So, you know, I had one in DC. So I went to a Penn State game, which is like four and a half hours away. I had one in Atlanta and I went to Auburn the night before. So that was a pretty quick drive. It's like an hour and a half. And then I had one in Sarasota, which is just north of Tampa. So I went to USF. And actually that game, I took 75 kids to the game with me for that one. So that was really special too.
Very, very cool. Neat way to work in the wedding schedule. Because I know people always kind of dread those wedding trips out there that are listening. I think you just found a nice hack to maybe make those a little bit more bearable as well too.
Oh, for sure. I'm great at weddings. That's like a running joke.
Nice. All right, let's get to some quick shot questions just from the journey and everything you've encountered here. First off, a favorite alma mater song that you sang this season?
Oh my gosh, it would have to be Country Roads. when West Virginia beat Baylor on Thursday night football, or was it Thursday night? Yeah, it was Friday night. That was really cool. Like, yes. You know, I chugged a bunch of moonshine before the game. That was, you know, that's their thing. And they sneak moonshine into the game. So that was like a very spirited Country Roads, which I don't know if it's technically their alma mater, but it's their tradition. So I was
definitely. Yeah. Now, cool moment. Two-part question from the food and drink front. What was the best food tailgate scene you had? And then B, probably a separate question. Well, what was just the craziest party? I'm guessing West Virginia was pretty high up on the party scale.
Yeah. It was tough because it was a week night game and like that. But I was pretty impressed because at the West Virginia, so their tailgate section opens at 5 and the game started at 7, and by like 5:45 it was absolutely packed. So they don't slow down. It's all gas, no brakes to get in there.
Yeah.
Okay. For tailgating, I had a really, really incredible tomahawk steak at UCF, and then they had some bacon wrapped jalapenos, which were incredible. And then at Penn State, they had a gourmet chef at their tailgate with like these stuffed hot peppers. So that's kind of like a cheat. But those were, my mouth watering about it.
I wouldn't have expected the gourmet chef at Happy Valley. I'm not going to lie.
I know. It was like a really, really bougie tailgate. And then I would say from like a crazy one, actually that the Texas game, I was invited to there's a company that it's like the Uber of tailgates. And they have this website, it's called Tailgate Connect. And you can go on like buy tickets to different tailgates. And I met this guy at the Charlotte game. Which Charlotte game was funny because they had an ambulance I tailgated out of, and he invited me to the Texas game tailgate when they had like a shot luge and shot girls and all this stuff. Like, all you can drink, all you can eat for like 60 or 70 bucks, but I just got a club ticket. So that was pretty cool. That was probably like one of the craziest ones I experienced for sure.
Yep, that's a good way to have fun in Austin for sure. I like that. All right, so we're looking ahead now to bowl season, which starts this weekend for our college football fans listening here. And right off the bat, you get to see a really cool team that I've had the pleasure of covering this season here in Central Texas, and the UTSA Roadrunners, 11 wins, Conference USA champions, and you're headed to the Cure Bowl for a top 25 matchup. What are your thoughts on that game to get bowl season going? And the I'd say the part two of your epic road trip.
Yeah, and like you know, the team Meet Me for Beep Beep.
Yep, that's them. Yeah. It's the 2-1-0 triangle of toughness. They love talking about that here in San Antonio.
I saw them play against Middle Tennessee State actually, and that game it got really close at the end out of nowhere. So I've seen them in person, and I'm excited to see them again now that they kind of caught fire. And you know, it's like you said, it's two ranked teams in my hometown of Orlando, the Cure Bowl. And I'm really hoping that they travel for this game. You know, the fan bases, Orlando is a great destination, obviously, and it's the week before Christmas. So,
yeah,
it's not near Disney, the stadium, but it's enough where you can you know, get in the car and get over there. But I'm excited. You know, it's one of those things where it seems like both of these teams will have something you know to play for. It's one of the rare bowl games I'd say that has a lot more pride on the line than other games. And, you know, that's when something special will happen. So I'm excited for that.
Very cool. I know you already spent some time in Texas and I missed you the first time around, but I think we'll be able to link up because I'm definitely going to be at the Alamo Bowl for the Horns against the Washington Huskies. So tell me a little bit about our plans in Texas and how much barbecue have you gotten in your Texas visit so far?
I've been to I've had so much barbecue across the country from, you know, Texas, North Carolina, Tennessee. Like, so I'm excited to get back. You know, I think I have 5 or 6 games in Texas during the bowl season, which is incredible because the beginning of the season, I think my outline had a bunch of Florida games. And yeah. I decided, you know, each week of this season, I add something more difficult, or when I get bored, I try to mix it up and challenge myself more. So I think at game like 45 or 50, I realized that, you know, I'd been to 45 or 50 stadiums, like different ones, you know, and now I'm at 59 stadiums out of 59 games. So I, you know, when I sat down to redo my bowl schedule, I said, I'm going to try to get to as many different stadiums as possible too. So I moved a lot of games. Like I went to Orlando, to UCF and USF. I'm going to the Cure Bowl, but that's because like it's one of the only two games. I think the other game is like in the Bahamas, which Betty can't get there, unfortunately.
So, I know. I would love to get there to that Bahamas Bowl one day. That's a bucket list game for sure.
Yeah, exactly. And that I actually that was University of Miami against someone, and I actually was at that game when the it was Miami against Buffalo. I don't know. The winner got to go to. It was Miami against Ball State, and the winner got to go to the Bahamas Bowl. And the marketing team had like sunglasses and blow up beach balls like on the sideline for the winner to celebrate with. And I actually got to go in the locker room and see them get invited to the Bahamas Bowl. So that was really special. But yeah, so you know, like I was saying, like I try to get to as many different bowl games as possible. So I have, you know, six different stadiums in Texas that I'm hitting up.
Very cool. Quick thoughts on the playoff game itinerary. I know it's pretty aggressive for you and who you like in those two semifinal games.
Yeah, I mean, as a Gator, it pains me to say that, like, I see Georgia going back-to-back after we've been trolling them about 1980 for, you know, forever. That's a lot.
Yeah, that's quite a concession for you to make. I'm pretty honorable by you there.
Impressive. Yeah, it's one of those things where at the beginning of the year, I've been on a few different interviews and, you know, people ask me like, what's the most, I haven't seen Georgia this year. And people are like, why have you seen Georgia? Because I said, I'm inevitably going to see Georgia. Like I've said like multiple times, like the longer I wait, the more likely I'm going to see them. And I'd rather see as many teams as possible. For the bowl season, for the playoffs, I'm going to be at the Fiesta Bowl again, avoiding them. And then for the national championship, I assume that they'll be there. But I pray to God that I don't see them. as someone who's like a Gator, you know, it shocks people in that Big Ten country for me to say, like, no, I want Georgia to – I hope Ohio State wins. And I'm not even a big Ohio State guy. But, you know, for me, it's like, what are they? The lesser of two equals kind of things. The enemy of your friend is your friend or something.
Definitely.
The best case scenario for any season for me is Florida and Georgia are undefeated when we go to Jacksonville for the world's largest cocktail party, which they no longer call them that. And then we beat them and crush their dreams. And then they cry the rest of the season. That would be the dream. But I mean, I own it. They're really good. You know, Michigan, I think, will handle TCU pretty cleanly, but, you never know. With the playoffs being like 3.5 weeks, you know, these teams really have, they can put some special things in that they haven't done all season. And that's something that is always exciting about that gap between the games.
Very cool. Again, it's Ben Chase, the most epic season-long college football road trip I've ever come across. It's been cool to be a part of it and hear about it. Is this the last? Is this something we're going to do every year? Or is this something you're going to revisit in future years to come? What are future plans for college football seasons ahead?
You know, a lot of people ask me that, and you know, at the beginning of the season, I didn't really have an answer. You know, I'm this is all on credit cards, and so that means I have to go pay them off, you know, in the off season. You know, I've had some things bubbling, you know, on the back end that, you know, may or may not happen. But you know, the dream at this point would be to be kind of the, and I know these are supposed to be quick hitters, but so I apologize that I ramble. But like the Anthony Bourdain of college sports.
Yeah, no, absolutely, I love the comparison.
And you know, I go to these different cities, and I don't think it'll happen immediately, but I think it's something that, you know, has legs, because I have schools and coaches and ADs reach out to me at this point and say, hey, can you come here? We'll help you out. We'll give you this, or like, we would love to have you here. And like, you know, it's the stories of these schools that aren't like Alabama, Texas, whatever. It's the ones that, I hate to use the term little brother syndrome, but it's the ones that people
that their community and their administration think are overlooked. You know,
now there's 100 to tell in Division One, and hundreds more to tell in Division Two, and it goes on and on. Yeah,
and like I've been to HBCUs D2. I went to a D2 like conference championship or something that was in, it was a crazy, Minnesota State College of Science or something.
Wow. Against, very cool.
It was just like, but I got to see them win a championship, and like they stormed the field, and and that's what it's all about. And, like, I love to tell these stories, like App State. I tweeted, if this week is 250 retweets, I'll jump into Duck Pond, which is their tradition. They have the line, "We win, we swim." And I said, if it gets 300, I'll jump in regardless. They got like 325. I went to my van to get towels and drive down to the pond, because the university police were like, "Yeah, we'll get you a parking spot right by the pond." But it was so much traffic that I just like hopped out of my car. And as I was running down to the pond, my friend got a video of people, like 30 people or 40 people that I've never met in my life, that were at the pond chanting, "Where is Ben? Where is Ben?" And that, like, that's what hit me. Like people want to share their traditions and their love. Like, and when I got there, it wasn't me just jumping in. It was like two other people that were already in there, like stripped down to their underwear. It was 36 degrees. And we just jumped in this pond, and then we went out and had drinks. That's what college football is all about. And that's,
yes.
I would love to do that. And I don't think it'll happen immediately, but I definitely believe that there's legs there for something.
And as wild as that story is, it does speak to the community that is college football, and we're all fans of it. So I appreciate you telling the story, and keep telling the stories as well too this season, throughout the bowls and beyond. Again, Ben Chase, thank you so much for hopping on Course of Life. Enjoy the rest of the trip, and we will link up for the Alamo Bowl. Sound good?
Yeah, definitely. And speaking of college football, my Gators are about to see if we got a 5-star commit here in a second. So I appreciate you having me on. And, go Gators, and I'll see you in Texas.
And we're back. Great chat there with Ben. I am always envious of these people that can sleep like anywhere, like in their car.
Oh, right. Yeah. I mean, this is absurd. When he said the amount of times he sleeps in his car and how he does in his setup, I wanted to give him a standing O during the interview, because I don't know if I'm a brave enough soul to last several, let alone one, two nights in my car before I drove myself bonkers. How long could you last in your car sleeping?
I don't even think I would last a night. I will happily spend the money to stay in a hotel.
he's a road warrior for sure, and I know he takes people up on that offer every once in a while, but it was really cool to hear about the journey it's taking him all through bowl season, which we'll get into in a moment. It's not stopping. It's getting him to playoff games and the national championship. And follow along Benji Chase on Instagram if you're not already, and be sure to follow us on social and subscribe right now if you like that conversation, or you can just enjoy what you're hearing on Course of Life.
Let's talk football. Let's talk bowl season. It's time. You've got your Run Your Pool article up there every week right now, going through bowl season. This week in bowling,
what we're calling 43 bowl games, Mike. Is that enough? Is that enough for everyone out there? I think so.
No, I think we need at least six more.
Yes. So This Week in Bowling is up. You can check out a pick that I have for every bowl game. I'm going to have a pick for every single bowl game, because I'm an absolute madman and I do this for the people, and I am actually watching every game. Like, that's how crazy I am. Let's talk about the bowl of the week, though, which I know you want to get into. It is Louisville and Cincinnati. Pretty evenly matched game. I'll just give you my pick right now. I like Louisville in that game, but it's the Wasabi Fenway Bowl. We're playing a college football bowl game at Fenway Park, and in the middle of December. Your thoughts?
I mean, this is the trend. The Yankees hold one now in Yankee Stadium as well. Yep. So this is the thing to hold them in baseball stadiums. I will say I have to, because the father-in-law went to Cincinnati, so I have to be rooting for Cincinnati.
Okay, you like the Bearcats. And Wasabi, by the way, is a cloud storage company. I had to look it up. Very random sponsor. What's your policy with Wasabi on sushi? Do you do a lot, a little, just a dab? What do you think?
So I don't eat a lot of sushi, but when I do, it's probably just a little. I just want a little bit of heat. I don't need a lot.
Just a dab. Top of the chopstick. That's it. Okay. So the Wasabi Bowl, Fenway Bowl, bowl of the week. Again, check out runyourpool.com for a pick of mine on every single bowl game coming up this week.
Let's talk about the NFL. The season is quickly approaching its regular end, it feels like here. Yeah. You'll run your pool picks. 3-2, you had a winning week. It's about nice. Time.
It's always nice, yes.
How does it feel to have a winning week in your picks?
It's good, yeah. It's been kind of a roller coaster ride. I'm just ticking above 500 by about one game right now as we head into week 15. So we're dangling above 500 with the NFL picks, a little bit better than college has fared so far. But yeah, just kind of everything's in the crosshairs right now. We won't talk my Pats because they're Monday Night Football results pending, but we got to talk about your Giants. They had a big divisional game, an inter-NFC East matchup against the Eagles, kind of a litmus test, and you did fall short. What are your thoughts?
Season's over. We're done.
You're not liking the vibes all of a sudden.
No,
not feeling
it. We've lost what, three straight. We've lost what, four of our last five.
Well, the tie. The tie. I mean,
We lost that game. That's a loss. I said it last week. That was a loss.
So the question is, are the Giants a good team, or are they just a fake good team, just like the Patriots are?
I think the Giants have potential. You know, I don't. I'm an armchair quarterback here. I don't even watch the games here, really, because it's got to be nationally televised to see any of this stuff. But
first of all, you have to pull your hair out to watch 60 minutes of the Giants game every single
exactly Sunday. That too. I mean, look, there are some good pieces on the Giants squad here. You also have an issue here, like you've had with other teams that maybe have flashes of greatness, where the last couple seasons there has been a culture of losing. So you need to break that culture with this young team, and that's hard to do. So we'll see what happens.
I'm feeling like 9-7-1. So we'll see if a 2-2 finish for the Giants gets them in the playoffs. That's the record.
I feel like the Giants are going to sneak into the playoffs. I don't know if this will be a back. I think at the beginning of the season, we were saying the Giants may not actually backdoor their way into the playoffs.
Yes, front door 2 months ago, yes.
I think now we're taking the side door here. So we're kind of taking that third route to get into the playoffs here. I think we're going to make it into the playoffs, and then we're going to lose the first week, and then that'll be it. So
definitely. All right, let's get to some hot stuff. I know you want to talk about Judge. I lost Xander Bogaerts, so the Red Sox Nation is absolutely reeling right now. How you doing over there?
Thank God Steinbrenner decided to open the pocketbook for Aaron Judge. Thank God. Because he needs to be named the captain of the team, because he is the player that will keep the Yankees in contention.
You like it. So You're all in.
I am all in on this. Thank goodness. All rise. Judges in session.
Yeah, I think it's a good signing overall. Listen, I mean, everyone's obviously going to come after the fact that they lowballed him. He had the career year. They had to pay a whole lot more. You know, they're paying out the ass for him. But the bottom line is, this is what you do in baseball. This is not a salary cap sport. You are the Yankees. You have the resources to keep this guy as a Yankee for life. He's been amazing for you. You keep him as a Yankee for life if you have the resources to do it. And they did.
Look, they maybe lowballed him a little at the beginning of the season. Aaron Judge also had one of the best seasons of all time.
It was the biggest FU in contract negotiation.
It really was.
I'm actually not going to take this deal because I don't think it's great. And I'm going to show you why this season.
Yeah, and he did. Exactly. So he got his money. He got paid. He's going to enjoy that for the next 9 seasons as a Yankee. He'll hopefully retire as a Yankee when all is said and done. Also, quick update as we head into the winter break. Quinnipiac Hockey, number 2 and number 3 in the polls. So there you go.
Good stuff.
Love it. We'll just say that real quick. Now let's hashtag always end with food.
Yep. Our food segment to wrap every Course of Life podcast. Be sure to follow Always End with Food on Instagram as well. If you like our food content, I'm making my way through the holiday drink circuit. And the recent one I tried was at P. Terry's, my local burger joint here. This shake of the month, Mike, is a gingerbread shake. Have you ever had anything like that? It was quite a unique flavor, I will say.
I don't think I have. I've seen something like that, but I don't think I've ever had
it. It was interesting because the color itself was like white, like chalk white, but it gave off all the gingerbread flavor and vibes. I give it 7 out of 10. Not quite a tick above the peppermint shake from Wendy's, I'd say, but maybe a tick below something, the cookie butter cold brew, which is still my leader in the holiday drink so far this season.
All right. There you go. This past weekend, I met a friend for lunch at a place that I did not even know existed here in Savannah. Not near the historic downtown at all, so it's a locals gem. Ben's Neighborhood Grill and Tap, great burger. One of the best burgers I've had in a long, long time.
What's with the neighborhood divey, like down home local places and their burgers? That's a theme that resonates a lot.
I mean, I got a patty melt and a 12-ounce burger, freaking huge. I mean, goddamn.
That's 3/4 of a pound for the illiterate ones out there.
Cooked perfectly medium rare. Perfect. And just was like, it was that kind of burger texture where it was like, it held together, but as soon as you bit into it, it just melted in your mouth. It's just like, it was fantastic.
A little food porn there to end our episode.
And really, really good sweet potato waffle fries.
Oh, fun fact, I had sweet potato fries this weekend too. It's like there we're samesies. Wow, oh, twins.
Man. Look at that.
Good times. All right, that was Always End With Food. Thank you to everyone who tuned in and made it this far. If you did, you have to subscribe. Wherever you're listening right now, click on our content and subscribe. It means a lot to us. It's very important for us getting this great podcast goodness out to the world. Thanks again for tuning in. We'll see you next week.